This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and you're listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, most of us are well aware that we should be saving money. But like all good advice, it's easier said than done. Today, we're going to take a little dive into the struggle of saving money, what's stopping us, and how do we get past it. And to help me do that, in the studio with me is Suraya Zainuddin, personal finance blogger at ringgitorringgit.com and curator of Money Stories for Malaysians, a book launched earlier this year. Welcome to the show, Suraya.
Thank you for having me, Roshan.
So Suraya, let's get straight into it. Why is it so hard for Malaysians to save?
I think that it's hard for Malaysians to save money. It always boils down to two things, right? We lack money, and that's the reason for that is everyone knows that cost of living is high and also incomes are stagnant. Everyone knows about that. But on the flip side of it, there's something that many of us don't talk about, which is how we behave with our money and the outside forces that impacts how we spend our money. So I think that a lot of Malaysians, right? Especially when you read articles related to, you know, like the B40 Malaysians. And if you look at the comment section, there are so many people saying things like really bad things like, oh, you know, it's their fault that they're not able to save money. Somehow it's like it's our own fault that we get into this predicament. And I just want to say that we have somehow so far we have neglected the fact that there are whole industries whose job is to get us to spend our money on their products and services. These are things like their price consultants in the market who, you know, devise tactics and ways to encourage you to spend your money. There are algorithms, there's technology. I think that my unique background, I majored in communications, and this interest in personal finance made me really aware that in the world of digital marketing, for example, there are so many ways that you're not even aware of that encourage your spending habits. For example, things like we all get targeted ads. And if you companies spend millions, even it's a $1 billion industry, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And the way I look at it, if they put out a lot of fishing rods, you know, if they're punching you many times, one of those rods or a few of those rods are bound to get some fish. And that's when our resolve weakens. We feel the need that, oh, you know, we had a particular bad day at work today, for example, because we have emotions, we're humans, and we want to do something triggered our spending behavior. So I think that's one of the reasons. And this technology is only going to get better and better.
Yeah, half the time it always sounds like there's an entire industry out to get our wallets, right?
Correct.
And it's true. It's not how it sounds. It is what it is.
It is.
And the key factor is that it's especially effective when we're not aware of what's happening.
Correct.
So you've just pointed out targeted ads, right? Mm-hmm. And the irony of targeted ads is sometimes it brings up products that you actually want.
That's true.
And that can bring up a conflict within you. Mm. But aside that, there are so many things that the industry does, right? Mm. And some of the examples you brought up in your article were things like the pricing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not about how much something costs. It's about how much someone is willing to pay for it.
Correct, yes. I was reading this one book. I'll dig it out and send it to you later. But I picked it up expecting to find like tips about bargain shopping. But what it really told me is the evolution of retail strategies. So back in the day, how companies priced their goods is basically item A, cost of making item A, and then they put a margin on it, and then that's the price. But nowadays, it's pretty much how much people are willing to pay for it. So that's how you get high margin items, like things that were produced for, say, for example, 2 ringgit, but sold for, say, for example, 100 ringgit. It is true. Perfumes, for example, highly, highly high margin items. But I was looking somewhere, and the cost of making perfume, for example, the ones that the expensive ones, 200-300 ringgit a pop, maybe the cost product, something like 5-10 ringgit, including the packaging. So it's crazy about how much the margin that goes into this kind of items.
So that's one thing. Just the fact that a lot of products are priced at what they think you'll pay mm-hmm. for. But then there are also simple things, right? Like the age-old pricing of products at 9 ringgit and 90 cent as
yes.
opposed to 10 ringgit, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think that gives you the illusion of value, per se. But then there's something else here. The three options. And we go for the middle one.
Yes.
Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Marketing, digital marketing students get this a lot. So they, okay, when you go to stores, many times, or even when you buy products and services, you will see many pricing options. And usually they're comprised of like three options. There's the cheap one, there's the middle one, and then there's the really expensive one. So this kind of strategy works in two ways. A lot of the majority of people tend to buy the middle one because A, they don't want to feel too cheap, but at the same time, they maybe don't want to splurge too much. So it's like a nice middle ground for that. But on the flip side, it can also be the higher margin, the highest price item, say for example, a 95 ringgit burger on the menu. You look at it and like, 95 ringgit is a bit too steep. I'll get the 25 ringgit burger. Where if you think about it, 25 ringgit burger is kind of steep, but because it's comparatively cheaper than the 95 ringgit option, then you're more inclined to get that one instead. And this happens across all industries.
It's scale, right? It's that you look at the scale of the prices and you're like,
psychology.
Oh, maybe. Yes. So the 25 ringgit burger looks more justified.
Mm-hmm.
It's context. It's also product segmentation as well. Mm-hmm. But there are so many things that are going on. End of the day, everyone is vying for a piece of our wallets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to be aware of all the different things that are going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Because only then can you really start to counter the impulsive urges to buy things or, there's a bargain over there. But really, is it a bargain or is it just a stated bargain?
Mm-hmm.
Soraya, we've seen the data about how difficult it is to save money, right? My own personal strategy is to automatically get the money out before I can even touch it.
Yes.
From your experience and your observations, what are some of the tactics that you've observed when it comes to saving money?
For me, what personally works is I track my expenses religiously for years now. And I love that you automated your expenses, you know, out of mind, out of sight, out of mind kind of strategy, which is amazing. But personally, I still have some ways to go about it. But what I really love to do is to kind of monitor my spending behavior and kind of make adjustments based from that. So by tracking my expenses, I kind of learn about my own behavior. And I could see like certain months, for example, what triggered certain expenses. And I think that awareness is more beneficial for me, or at least it works with my personal spending, and I become more aware. Oh, okay. Like for example, this time of the month, I should be more aware that this kind of triggers will happen. For example,
is there a particular way that you track your expenses, like an app or a spreadsheet or anything like that?
I've tried so many things. I've tried. From the note taking. That lasted for a good few years until I moved on to Google Spreadsheets. And then I don't have the skills for that. So that was abandoned really quick. And then I tried many apps before I maintained with the one that I'm using right now.
So what's the app you're using right now?
It's called Money Lover. It's developed by a team from Vietnam. So shout out to our ASEAN buddies there. I like it because the UI is really good.
Okay.
And it makes it easy for you to insert your expenses.
All right. And in just a little bit, we're going to dive deeper into your personal experiences with personal finance, because you've had a long journey in documenting all these different things. So I'm really curious to learn more about that. You're tuned into Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. This morning, I'm speaking to Soraya Zainuddin, personal finance blogger at ringgitorringgit.com and curator of Money Stories from Malaysians, a book launched earlier this year. Now, Soraya, when we left off, we were talking about the app that you use to track your expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to expand this topic a little more. What common tactics do you use to manage your personal finance?
My personal finance is quite, it's individualized. When people say that personal finance, I really emphasize the personal side of it. So I happen to find a way that works with my personality, my habits, my tactics. Again, I think that understanding how you behave with your money is the first step towards how you manage money in general, in life. How I manage it is tracking my expenses and then seeing how I behave in certain spending and triggers, right?
So essentially, you're providing what is basically big data analytics to yourself.
Yes, thank you for putting it in that way. That is so fancy. I've never heard anyone putting in those words. But yes,
because if you've collected years and years of expense data,
yes,
you can kind of see the patterns, which months require more money, on average, what is your expenditure like. Mm-hmm. And if you see something go a bit too high, you can like, okay, something was wrong here.
Mm-hmm. I've tracked it for at least about like 10 years now.
Wow.
And in my website, I actually do a monthly update on my expenses. So I would tell people, oh, okay, so this month, this is how much I spent on groceries. This is how much I spent on transportation. This is how much I spent on rent and utilities. And I have 13 categories and I've kind of locked that in. And also once a year, and I've done this about, I think about 2-3 years in a row, I do like an annual review. What were my top expenses of the year? And it's really fascinating because who was it, that famous personal finance guru, Ramit Sethi? He said something like, if you want to know what type of person you are, let me look at your spending, at your expenses. So I wanted to, of course, everyone's personal favorite subject is themselves. Mm-hmm. So by looking at this kind of like data, I could see, I have like that feel good my expenses for the year, okay, the majority goes for like business, for example. Oh, okay, so I'm someone who puts a priority on my business. And then like there's a big chunk of like money going towards donations as well. So, so that makes me feel good that my money goes to the right direction. I think many people, you know, we want our money to be used as optimally as possible. And having and knowing that, yes, it did, and also knowing where it can be improved, it's extremely helpful.
From what you've just talked about, I can't help but imagine that I'm talking to Suraya Incorporated, and what you do is an annual report. Every month you're giving us a monthly statement of what's going on. It's really, really fascinating. Mm. And I have a feeling that this may sound very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very ambitious for most people to start. So let's start at the beginning then. Mm. How did you get started with all this?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It just one day I opened a book and I just wrote down what I spend on, and like, oh, this is helpful. I just keep continuing it. I think that somehow along the way, I've made it into a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me came naturally. For other people, it has to become more like a conscious thing. But I just kind of really enjoyed seeing what went where.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you on tracking expenses. To the best of your ability, try to track your expenses because it gives you that analysis of where your money goes.
Mm.
And only once you start measuring something can you then manage it.
Correct.
Right? Sorry, you mentioned 13 categories.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go through a brief view of the categories? Because that could help people at least build the system.
Okay, all right. So I have 13 categories inside my expense tracking app. And for many people, they might have more, they might have less. So inside my personal categories are things like donations and gifts. That's one category. Utilities and rent. Business, groceries, traveling and dates. So I put that in one category, social activities, public transportation, insurance and medical, mobile, and also food. But I also have two special categories. One is miscellaneous needs, and one is miscellaneous wants. So these are things that don't really fit in with the rest, but expenses that kind of turn up out of the blue. So I'll give you some examples. In things like miscellaneous needs are things I pay for maybe like once a year, maybe like passport renewal, right? It doesn't fit in anywhere else. It's not regular enough to have its own category. So I just chuck everything in there. Things like tax payments, things that I need to pay. If not, I'll go to jail. and then there's also things like miscellaneous ones. So these are, this I track religiously, because these are moments when I'm weak. These are moments when I let how I feel take over my spending. These are when I browse Instagram too much, for example, and I feel like my home decoration needs a makeover, then I start buying pillows, for example. It's things like that. These are, so every month I would check, what is it that I bought because that I don't strictly need, but I just wanted. Things like that belong to those category.
Right. Okay. I like that category because it gives you a immediate measurable point for how well you've done in terms of maintaining to your budget.
What do you do for your own categories?
So I have Very functional as well, right? Because mine is based on activity. So if it's social, it goes under something. If it's work-related, it goes under something else. Food. And then there's also like personal development. And everything that is from things like petrol to telcos to everything goes under, what do I call it? Fixed expenses or something like that. Very accounting standards, but it works for me. And it's not just about accounting for... Because when I go out and eat with my friends, as opposed to going out and eat with my family, these are two different things. I want to account them differently. One is family time, one is social.
Yes. Right? I also have that.
Yeah. It's. I think it's very important to... it's not about what you spend the money on, but why you spend that money.
Correct.
What other things have you found that help you maintain your budget, your habit tracking, your general personal finances?
Okay. I think that the website helped a lot. I started it. It started because I just wanted to, I just became a self-employed writer during that time. And I just wanted somewhere to put my writing portfolio. So I thought, oh, okay, let's add more articles related to personal finance, a subject that I love. Put them in there. It kind of like took a life on its own and people started reading them, which is so strange to me, but not ungrateful, but very, very welcome. But still strange that people know what I spend on. So I think that I started because I like the topic. I continued because people enjoy them. And having those kind of feedback from people is like, oh, you know, I never understood how people do personal finance on a personal level. And that really kind of like kept me going. It's nice to have those kind of feedback.
So based on that feedback, right, what is the most common thing you've heard based on your writings?
They say that, again, communications major, they say that it's relatable, which is a nice comment to get. They say that thank you for making the technical less technical. They say that it's easy to understand.
Yeah, that happens when in all these high-level things like economics and finance and banking, these are all things that can be very difficult to understand. Having someone break that down can be very, very useful. Now, you just talked about your journey as a writer, right? And on that note, I want to talk about the book, Money Stories from Malaysians. It's a collection of stories.
It is a collection of stories, yes.
So why don't you tell me a bit about the book?
Right, okay. So it started because I am obsessed with adding more streams of income. That's what they say, right? You have to add more streams of income in case one fails, at least you have backup. So I was kind of like racking my brain, okay, what is consistent with my values and also something that can make money, because making money is important. And, you know, I eliminated a lot of options and finally decided on, you know what, let's do a personal finance theme book. So I organized a writing competition. I told people, go crazy. The theme is personal finance, go crazy. And I got back themes that are just outside of my imagination. It's really amazing how people interpreted that subject. You would think personal finance is like tips, how to save money, you know, around those like advisey kind of things. But I think throughout this process, people have started to reclaim their own finances in a way that is understandable for them, in a way that makes sense for them. So I got about roughly about 40, 50 entries, selected 10, including one of my own. And it's a range of stories from like the story of a single father with his young daughter and how a person managed her money, her finances during her PhD. And a story about the concept of memories as currency. My personal contribution to the book is how would a Malaysia that implements universal basic income would look like. So it's a range of topics. And that one, the one that's released earlier this year is Volume 1. Volume 2 is underway and expected to be released next year.
Well, I wish you good luck. Those all sound like very interesting stories. On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Soraya.
Thank you for having me again. It's been fun.
I was speaking to Soraya Zainuddin, personal finance blogger at ringgitorringgit.com and curator of Money Stories from Malaysians, a book launched earlier this year. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan, signing off for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.